Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
America's back, baby. Yeah. Oh, we're doing it. We're doing it. Our long national nightmare's over. Joseph Robinette Biden is bringing America back, making it great for the next time after it wasn't great for a while, but now it will be again. And I, for one, am excited. I'm Robert Evans, and this is no longer the worst year ever because we have solved all of our problems.
Great intro.
Fuck
it's
yeah,
the best
Robert.
Day of the best
Fuck
year.
Yeah.
Yeah, we dunned it.
I completely believe you.
I agree. I believe. I'm Katie Stoll, by the way.
Hello, Katie.
In case
Stoll.
I hadn't Us. Mentioned it.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, guys. What? Who else is here? Who else is joining us? Co-host?
I think Robert Evans and Cody Johnston are here.
There we go. I was just waiting for everyone's names to
I'm
be introduced.
Sophie. Hi.
Hey, everybody.
I want to start with question for you guys before we dig in. How are you feeling on today, the day that Donald Trump finally became president?
I mean, happy last day of Donald Trump's presidency record.
I mean, we delayed recording today so that we could watch his farewell address. And we all agreed that he almost seemed sort of presidential, but then snuck in all of his usual lies.
I mean, I'd say less he seemed presidential and more I was just kind of surprised that he made it 18 minutes without an explicit death threat.
Yes.
Which was like,
that's
good.
Big
he's not
for him.
Actively trying to incite violence right now.
That's
although
what
he's
I mean.
Passively justifying all of the violence of several hundred years of American imperialism by talking about how rad it is that we stole this land. So that's not great. But for him, it is a step forward.
Yeah. I have been thinking all day today about the day after the election in 2016. And you guys all know that Biden's not my guy. I'm not thrilled, although we are going to talk about some of the stuff that he is going to hit the ground running. That seems positive in many ways and all of that. But I do feel relief today. I feel relief that we have one more day till he is no longer the president, and we survived it. These 4 years have gone by incredibly slow and incredibly fast, and it's shown just how much damage can be done, you know, but also how much damage was already done, and I'm ready to get to work. That's how I feel, and I wanted to start with that kind of positive message to everybody.
I love it, Katie.
We love positivity. We love, positivity from you and positivity from our beautiful president.
Beautiful president. Gorgeous.
Which are the same thing. We're doing great.
Yeah, so I think I don't know, there's a few things to go into. I think some of what is necessary is, I guess, talking about some of the stuff that is planned from the Biden administration for his first day in office and first 100 days in office. And I kind of wanted to start with something that's just in the last couple of days started being passed around really heavily around the internet. Which is that Biden and his people have talked several times about vetoing the Keystone XL pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very complicated, like the actual story of what's going on. So you'll generally see one of two things when people talk about this online. One is either folks being like, Biden has confirmed that he's going to veto the Keystone pipeline on day one. And for a little bit of background, that was the pipeline that passes through North and South Dakota that Standing Rock was protesting. It goes up to Alberta in Canada, and it is supposed to transfer a shitload of bitumen, which is like oil-rich sand and shit, that is a way to get a lot of extra oil out of the earth, but also produces, I think, something like 30% more emissions than the standard kind of, just because of the
Hell
process
yeah.
of cleaning.
That's,
so
that's a lot. A lot is good, right? More is good?
Yeah, a lot is great. The more emissions, the better, because who likes the winter, right?
Yep.
Now, the other downside to transporting oil this way through a pipeline is that pipelines 100% of the time leak and spill tens of thousands of gallons of oil into waterways that people need in order to not die.
And this one actually did have a spill.
It sure did. Like 9,000 gallons. Yeah.
I was going to say, when has that ever happened regularly?
Yeah, it happens every single time with every single pipeline. And yeah, so that's a big part of why, like, the indigenous folks at Standing Rock, who were kind of the core of organizing and planning that, like, we're up in arms because, like, you know, we need this water to not die of dehydration, and you're going to pour poison into it. And then the pipeline poured poison into their water.
And yeah, and we know, because we know it'll happen. We know.
And not just about, I mean, the water, sure, but then ecosystems, you know, wildlife, all of it.
And, you know, in addition to the fact that, like, one of the things defenders of pipelines will point out is that, well, but it's better for the environment on the whole than the traditional way of just transporting, like, fuel through trucks and stuff, because you do have less emissions with the pipeline. It just pollutes the area around the pipeline as opposed to polluting the entire atmosphere. And I guess that's technically true, but again, like, number one, doesn't really make it okay to poison people's water. And number two, what you're actually doing is allowing the process of killing the atmosphere with fossil fuels to continue even longer.
Yeah, you're saying, look, it's the lesser of two evils. Well, no, actually, the better solution would be all these other alternative energy sources to be explored. Also, that's a better answer for the other justification for it, which is jobs creation. A lot of people
jobs
here
creation,
in America
which, point and it's to very it funny,
as, like,
Katie.
This is going to, Why? Go ahead.
It's very. It's funny that you bring that up, and appropriate that you bring that up, because obviously, when it became clear that Joe Biden was going to be the president, the Canadians in Alberta, in particular, and in the government in Alberta, I should say, started freaking the fuck out, because this is a big economic thing for Alberta in particular. They have made a lot of, like, they've even threatened to sue the U.S. government if Biden does this thing that he said he's going to do. But they have also done their best to get in on the green energy and job creation train. So, like, they've been basically sending back counter offers. And sometimes on people who are very more critical of Biden online, you'll see them say, like, he's going to approve the pipeline. He's just going to approve the green version of the pipeline that Alberta has pushed. And what they have promised is, we'll make sure that the pipeline is 100% constructed and operated using renewable energy. So it'll be transporting fossil fuel, but we'll build the thing with 100% renewable energy. So it's green. It'll be
perfect.
A green poison oil tube. And we're going to only use union labor. So
it's
is the offer they've made, and it's one of those things. Again, it kind of depends on how we don't know what's going to happen. And what you think is going to happen kind of depends on how cynical you are, because I've heard two things in the articles I've read from the Biden administration. One is that an article reporting on how Biden's going to veto it day one. Someone from the campaign responded and said, "Well, that's based on an old presentation that we put out," and didn't really give any more context than that. And another thing that's come out is, like, when Alberta kind of came back with this, or when, you know, the company making it came back with this, like, green poison pipeline plan, someone from the Biden campaign was like, so far, like, there's no change to Biden's promise to veto the pipeline. So I don't know what's going to happen. It doesn't seem like anybody does. It would not be the least Joe Biden thing in the world to approve a green fossil fuel pipeline.
It would.
That
not.
Said, that in fairness, he has not even really commented on that to my knowledge, and so far seems poised to still veto the pipeline. So I'm going to give, before I, like, land either way, I'm going to give the dude a chance to do the good thing and kill that pipeline.
I'll say that I also read somewhere in some article that specific item might not happen tomorrow. Originally, that was part of the conversation. Like, he's going to hit the ground running with these two things. The other thing being immigration reform, which we will also talk about. But so I think that if something was to get pushed tomorrow, it might be that for all of these things that you're
that
outlining.
Would,
but
would
yeah.
be something he could do. He would not need anyone else's approval, because the Obama administration canceled the approval for the pipeline, and then Trump reapproved it and shit. So Biden could unilaterally veto that. Like, that is a thing he doesn't need anyone's help to do. And if you just look at the other stuff he's promised to do day one in his first 100 days, it's one of relatively few things that he can kind of do completely on his own, because he's going to be facing, as you can imagine, pretty much complete blockading from the Republicans on most other stuff.
As much as they can.
Also,
so in July of 2020, the Supreme Court also ruled against the pipeline getting a permit to continue.
It should be a real easy win to give at least something to the left. Like, but again, he is Joe Biden, you know.
Well, at the same time, it's like, okay, it seems like, well, you don't even necessarily need to do this because the Supreme Court has already blocked it. So it's almost like, well,
what specifically did they block? Was it some like way that it was being built, you know, or
They didn't take into account a certain fish species. So it might continue and that might be taken care of and then it'll still be a problem.
I just feel like that still leaves room for there to be some compromise, some alternative way of proceeding with the building. So
it didn't kill it entirely.
Right.
As many people saying don't build this pipeline is good.
Yes.
But that green energy building, that's so good.
Yeah, it's very silly. It would be good if Biden kills the pipeline, the Keystone at least. Like, that would be a thing he would do that I would say, good on you, Joe.
Thanks.
And it's good optics.
It would be good optics. We'll see what actually happens. Yeah. I think we've laid out that, like, it's kind of impossible to know if that's what he will actually do.
Right.
Now, in terms of other 100-day stuff, Biden has announced a few things that he's going to do right away, some of which he can do and probably will do on day one. He's promised around a dozen executive actions on his first day in office, including a mask mandate on federal property and for interstate travel, extending a nationwide restriction on home evictions and foreclosures, which I'm sure will have a bunch of holes, you know, as all of the eviction moratoriums have, but it's better than nothing. A continuation of the pause on student loan payments, and he's also going to push for passing the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief legislation package, which is, you know, not what people were promised, i.e. the $2,000, but also has a bunch of really good stuff in it. We'll see if it actually gets to pass, but the thing that excites me most about that actually is removing the, I don't know if loophole's even the right way to term it, but making it illegal to pay disabled people less. It's good to not let them, like, that's even in some ways a bigger deal than the raising the minimum wage, to me, is like cracking down on that legal disparity that has never made any sense and has always been used to exploit and abuse.
It's just cruel.
It's just cruelty. It's just unreasoning, unthinking cruelty. It would be good if that weren't around anymore.
Slowly chip away at the cruelty would be nice.
And what I have seen some like disability rights activists pointing out is that another thing that needs to change is at least either removing or raising the cap on how many assets someone can have to receive disability. Because right now it's very low, and it can actually that can stop people who are disabled from, for example, saving up enough money to buy a much better wheelchair that improves their quality of life. If you are receiving disability, which basically pays you barely enough to survive, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the idea. If you can't work, the government will pay you barely enough to survive. But if you are able to, I don't know, through working some sort of side gig or whatever, accrue enough money to have over, I think it's like $2,000 or something in like liquid assets. It's a very low number. You lose your disability. Which means if people try to like save up for a high quality wheelchair or something that will massively improve their quality of life and isn't covered by, you know, Medicare or whatever they're on, they can lose their disability. Because if you have, you know, a couple grand, clearly you're not disabled anymore.
I think it's a thing that needs to end. It's horrible.
And it's, I am not at all anything close to an expert on this. I've just been trying to keep track on what people who are advocates in this community are saying. But like, it's a horrible problem. It seems like something that needs to be changed immediately. I don't know that it will, because that part does not seem to be on the docket. But it seems like reducing or ending the disparity between minimum wage would be maybe a step towards addressing that injustice as well.
Thank you for that explanation.
Yeah. Other shit that Biden's planning to do right away is rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement, which I do think he can do, kind of, which is like, again, it's not enough.
It's the bare minimum.
But better, yeah.
It's a symbolic but good gesture to do right out of the gate.
Yeah, it's a... Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to say virtue signaling, but it is a signal that we're not... Yeah, we're reversing course at least. I don't know. You know, you gotta take what you can get, I guess.
It's a very expected move.
Yeah, but, it's wholly wholly unsurprising. You just need to back it up with actual. Like, for example, not building a pipeline with green energy.
And if those two things actually do happen day one, you know, rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement, blocking the pipeline, that's a sign that, like, we might actually see meaningful movement on climate change that isn't purely for show, which would be good because the death of all life on Earth thing. Well,
maybe for show isn't enough.
Yeah. So we'll see. What's not for show, or at least, I mean, it might be for show for them, but is not just a showy thing.
We'll actually do something,
Is ending the Trump's Muslim ban on travel, which restricts travel and immigration from Syria, Iran, Iraq, Sudan, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen, Eritrea, Nigeria, Myanmar, Kyrgyzstan, and Tanzania. That would immediately help a lot of people and their families. And
but Robert, I heard that it wasn't a ban or a Muslim ban. I heard it was something else, some other way to say it.
That we finally figured out what was going on.
Oh, good. Oh, we finally figured out what was going on. So we no longer have to shut things
down.
We no longer have
a racist immigration ban.
Good, good, good.
And that is, you know, when I talk about trying to be actually fair, like, none of us are fans of Joe Biden or the Democratic Party and are, in fact, pretty consistently and explicitly critical of them. That's an unequivocal good. So I'm on board. I'm glad that will happen. It's positive.
We vote for them in the hopes that they do these things that we can all agree on and that we can also pull them further left.
Less damage than the alternative, essentially.
His immigration stuff. It's helpful, I think, in these, especially these coming days and weeks, to sort of check out like a Never Trumper reaction to what Biden does, because, like, for example, with his immigration plan, David Axis of Evil Froom.
America's greatest mind.
The greatest mind, a true wordsmith, is resistant to Biden's immigration plans because the only options after this are overwhelming mass immigration constantly or mass detentions for immigrants. And it's like, well, if David Froom is thinking that, then maybe it's actually good. If that's what he thinks the solution is, and his reaction to a plan.
The angrier Joe Biden makes David Froom, the more pleased I will be with the Biden administration.
Yeah, exactly. To see any like Lincoln Project ghoul be like, oh, Biden's too, this is too much. Like, okay, then good.
Yeah.
To take a quick break, and then when we come back, we can dig into the immigration stuff. Is that a good plan?
Beautiful.
Yeah. You know who else pisses off David Froom?
Don't say Raytheon, because I don't think that's true.
No, not Raytheon, but our other sponsors do, because one of our vettings for sponsors is that they have at least one employee who has done an upper decker in David Froom's bathroom. We require photographic evidence of that. The MyPillow guy does upper deckers in literally every bathroom he uses.
Okay.
Anyway, listen to these products, all of which are represented by companies that have people who have shat in the top of David Froom's toilet. We're back.
We sure are.
We did it.
Whose pillow is no longer being sold at Bed Bath & Beyond?
Or Kohl's or Wayfair.
Mm-hmm. You know, just got to take these wins. Yeah.
You know it's bad when Wayfair is like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, we don't want the martial law pillow. Thank you.
I don't want the fascist military coup pillow.
Wayfair is beloved of MAGA supporters, I'm positive.
It's got to be.
Well, no, isn't Wayfair the one where there was a conspiracy that they were selling children in the that's furniture?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's
there
my
is.
Point. That's God. My point.
I guess that's some Q territory. Anyway, Joe Biden's immigration plan, as promised.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can all agree, incredibly erotic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Highly erotic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Biden after dark.
Mm-hmm.
So Biden's, so he's going to build a wall. he's going to make Canada pay for this one.
We're finally, and this is where I'm 100% backing Joe, because we need to stop the Canadian menace from coming down to our shores.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Don't you know it? Yeah. his...
Oh my God, there's one in the room.
his immigration bill is pretty good. You know, it's pretty big.
Yeah, it's a huge improvement.
It's great.
One of the things that I like about it is it's similar in a lot of ways to an immigration bill that was pushed but not passed during Obama's second term. Mm-hmm. One of the big differences is that bill, in order to try to please the Republicans, who are unpleasable, included a bunch of extra money for border defenses and wall shit, and this does not. Now, obviously, if it is ever going to get passed, I'm sure they'll add a bunch of horrible bullshit for Border Patrol.
Yeah.
But they're not starting there, which is... nice. It's it like is, more hardball than I expected.
It's like what Cody, you always talk about. You know, you don't start with a compromise. You start with what you want.
Yeah, exactly what you want. Maybe even a little more.
Maybe even a little more. His bill provides an 8-year path to citizenship for around, I think it was 11 million people currently without legal status. Even a shorter path, I guess, for Dreamers, which is great. Let's see. I believe this is from the AP. Under the legislation, those living in the U.S. as of January 1st, 2021, without legal status, would have a 5-year path to temporary legal status or a green card if they pass background checks, pay taxes, and fulfill other basic requirements. From there, it's a 3-year path to naturalization. For some immigrants, the process could be quicker. The so-called Dreamers, the young people who arrived in the U.S. illegally as children, as well as agricultural workers and people under temporary protective status, could qualify more immediately for green cards. It's great. I think that's great.
It's so unbelievable. David Froome read this and was like, this is going to lead to mass detentions of immigrants and caravans. He didn't say caravans, to be fair. Yeah. I
was hoping he actually said
caravans. No, he didn't literally say caravans.
I give it at most 6 months before we have another big caravan scare on the right.
Absolutely. Like,
it's absolutely coming.
It also provides grants for workforce development and English language learning.
Yeah. Cool. That's cool. I love...
There's a lot that's good in here. Like, I think everyone knows I'm a borders shouldn't exist and nation states shouldn't either guy, but that's not on the docket right now, and it seems like it makes life less shitty for a lot of people who currently have to deal with more bullshit than I can imagine. Mm-hmm. So I'm down with it. Yeah.
I wish I had someone here that we could call... right now to talk about this, because I think that this probably means a lot to a lot of people.
Yes.
We're very privileged, white, all of us sitting here talking about this, and I'm very aware of it. But this has been a hammer over the head of people for 4 mm-hmm. years. And so many stories of people who can't even confide in their friends that they're undocumented and living double lives in a way. And if you are one of them right now, I hope you're feeling a little sense of hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I can say, you know, as I brought up a couple of times, I spent most of the last year and change living with a Chinese national who has a green card and had to deal with a massive surge in the amount of bullshit and like a number of different scares where she thought she was going to be forced out of the country. Despite doing everything the legal way, and obviously, as she herself acknowledged, she's in the higher, like the more privileged class of people who are trying to immigrate, like by the book. But prior to the election, her thing was like, I'm not going to be able to stay here if Trump wins a second term.
Yeah.
And you know, that's, it's, if things were that hard for her as, again, someone who had a stable job, who owns a house, who had gone through everything the legal way, people who didn't have that option because, for example, the area they lived in, Guatemala, was rendered damn near uninhabitable by climate change and there was no way for them to get a job. And so they had to come somewhere where they could get food for their family. I imagine it seems like everything in here will make them deal with at least less bullshit, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, what else you can really hope for after the last 4 years than
right.
Some very marginalized and abused people will have less shit to deal with.
Yeah. And I mean, yes, just less shit. I mean, also reunifying the families at the border is a lot of stuff of that's just like his Biden's instinct seems to be to reverse Trump.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is going to mean kind of a reverse Biden, too. Like he's reflexively like reversing Trump stuff and reacting to that. And, you know, a lot of Trump stuff is kind of an extension of all presidencies.
Yeah.
And so I think that's generally a good sign too. And it's going to be fascinating to see how the conversation changes on the right from well, we're fine with immigrants as long as they come here legally. And this plan gives that option. So, but they're going to hate that. They got to change how they talk about it. Like,
well, yes,
that's legal, well, but it shouldn't be legal.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing where there will be positives and negatives of that, because the positive is that they will have to be more open with their racism. The negative is that they will be more open with their racism.
Right.
So, you know, nothing's ever as clear a positive as we want. But I think what this means is that we'll actually have someone in the White House who is going to do the bare minimum to fight for things to be somewhat less shitty for a group of people who have dealt with too much shit in their lives already. And that's a good thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it makes it easier for everyone else to fight for them, too, because the administration is not actively trying to murder these people.
Yep.
Just passively sometimes.
At least people, here.
Yeah.
We'll see how Biden's foreign policy shakes out.
We for sure will. And obviously, like, the threat of, you know, more functional coups than were enacted during the Trump administration is a thing to be worried about when we talk about refugees coming to the U.S. You know, what happens with Biden in Venezuela? What happens with Biden in
Bolivia?
Yeah. What happens with Biden and I don't know, a bunch of places all over the damn world, really. What happens with Biden in Iran, right? Like, but
Iran, I mean, like Biden and, like, you know, they're itching for a lot more China conflict, a lot more Russia conflict.
Yep.
As soon as Trump's gone, it's going to be like, well, now we can take on Putin. And then, well, what does that mean? Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing, like, right now you've got some people in the Biden administration calling what China's doing to the Uyghurs, which is the Muslim population, that they've put huge numbers of people in concentration camps, calling it a genocide, which I don't think is necessarily unfair, but I'm worried it's going to presage some of the same Biden-style international sanctioning that we've seen in the past, which isn't an effective way to push political change generally, and often, I mean, almost always just hurts poor people in the countries that we sanction. Now, China's more resistant to sanctions than anywhere else we could sanction because they're China. It's not like sanctioning Iraq, but it's still, I think, there's a pretty good chance. I'm going to assume, unless proven otherwise, that any actions we take there are mainly just going to hurt poor people who have nothing to do with the government's policies on the Uyghurs, because that's a pretty safe thing to assume about that sort of behavior.
It's usually how it goes, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's always, like, 100% of the time how it goes.
Yeah.
And there's already senators, Democratic senators, talking about using sanctions more aggressively.
Yeah.
Which, yeah.
Yeah.
Back to normal. Back to basics.
Back to basics. America's back.
we're back, and we're gonna build back Build better back. We're going to
be
best building
back. Be best! That's what I was about to say.
Building,
you stole my joke before I said it.
I'm sorry.
I have to contribute something.
I'm sorry.
The refugee shit, which I shouldn't call it the refugee shit, but the positive changes, like we're currently at like a historic low of the number of refugees the U.S. will admit, which is like 15,000 this year under Trump, which is about as tightly as he could lock it down. And I don't know how many are going to be let in under Biden, but it seems like they're significantly loosening things. They're opening up processing centers in other countries to allow people who are at risk in countries outside of the United States to go to processing centers in order to get refugee visas and come in legally. That's good. Right?
That's great.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. We like helping. We like helping.
I'm a big fan of, again, things not being as shitty for refugees, because I've known a lot of them, and it sucks to be a refugee.
It's a push. You're like, okay, well, we'll help the refugees, and next we'll be like, well, we won't help create refugees, and then
too much to hope for from Biden.
Sure.
Again, back to the conversation of 2 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But these are positives.
There are a number of positives, you know.
The Senate, we got Congress. It's just like using this to do all of these good things and make sure they happen and do even more good things and use Congress to do things to show that things can happen that are good. And then maybe you get more seats in 2022 instead of losing them in 2022.
Mm-hmm. I still think unlikely, but we'll see.
We will see.
We will, won't we? Two more years.
Mm. Yeah.
Two more years.
What else do we want to talk about right now?
I mean, you know, there's a couple of... number one, in terms of like when we talk about what actually is going to happen day one, we should note that, because we've been chatting about what Biden's promised to do on day one, when Trump came into office, he promised on day one that he was going to repeal and replace Obamacare and begin constructing a wall on the border of Mexico. And neither of those things happened on day one.
And to Katie's tweet, he did not lock her up.
He didn't lock her up.
He never locked her up. Yeah, I think that that's really important to keep in mind. We sort of have a majority.
It's better than we were afraid it was going to be.
I mean, that's comprised of independents. Yeah.
And Manchin.
And Red Dems. And Manchin.
It's just a reminder to keep expectations, you know. There's this, well, I guess anybody listening to this show probably doesn't have the highest of expectations anyway.
It's medically impossible for my expectations.
I don't know. I just see it so much on social media now, people being excited, and I always feel like the buzzkill. It's like, well... guys, like, let's be realistic now.
No, don't be excited about anything in politics ever. Ever, no matter who.
No, like, whatever good happens, and I do think a number of things that are positive and wouldn't have happened under Trump will happen, and things will be easier for a lot of marginalized people than they would have been with another 4 years of Trump. That said, everything good that happens will be less good than it sounded before on paper before it actually got rammed through, you know, the government. It'll be 4 years of compromises and frustration more than anything else if you're somebody who actually cares about the reality of what's happening as opposed to the first article that gets dropped about what they plan to do before they actually can succeed in slamming it through Congress.
Yeah, always remember that the government's bad.
It's bad. Yeah. It's a bad system that works badly.
That they're not on your side.
They're not on your side. Most of them don't care about you. And the ones that do care about you are more often incompetent than they are able to capably.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ineffective.
Yeah.
Yeah. The good ones are very bad.
Yeah. Mm. And the bad ones are very good at being bad.
There we go.
That's why our system's perfect.
Yeah.
No notes, I guess.
Started with good intentions. But
and then there's the Josh Hawleys of the world.
And then there's
Then there's the actual fascists. Yeah.
Right. Fuck that guy. These fucking weird evil dorks. God.
Dweebs. Just evil
dweebs. That's a possible positive about all these dweebs. Trump had decades and decades of publicity and quote-unquote charm He's an entertainer. He's good at getting attention, doing these things, and building up his brand. And he's entertaining to watch. He's, you know, all the things we know about him. Holly and Cruz are two of the people who are really clearly trying to, like, harness the populism, the right, yeah. the quote, right-wing populism. And Holly's a boring dweeb.
They don't got charm.
I still don't know what he sounds like. And Ted Cruz has been for a couple of years really trying to do like the Trump Twitter thing. Like I'm the culture warrior on Twitter and I'm owning the libs. He's really bad at it. And nobody likes him. Even the people who have to pretend.
You know it's not going to really work for them.
You know what he's really good at though, guys? Being the least fuckable man in America.
Oh, I was going to say jerking off on 9/11, but
yeah. You know. I mean, it's one of those like I don't think because I think everyone who has been paying attention is looking for the next authoritarian who tries to take power in this country. You know, the guy who, if we're unlucky, will be smarter and better at inspiring personal loyalty than Donald Trump, who was bad at that, for the record.
Yes.
Too good, but still not great at it. And I don't think Hawley or Cruz are. Matt Gaetz is someone who worries me, but I don't think it's him either. I don't think we've seen that person yet, at least not in a way that it's obvious who it is.
Crenshaw is somebody I'm keeping my eye on, too.
Yeah, I don't think Crenshaw's got the actual charisma, nor do I think he's evil enough.
I think, he's shrewd. He's shrewd. He's been able to sort of...
He's not an idiot, yeah.
Yeah, he's been able to sort of weirdly navigate the past couple of years to not come out like a Holly or a Cruz. Tucker, I don't know if he's interested in that.
The other argument against Tucker is that
worries me, though.
Tucker worries me too, but he at the beginning of Donald Trump's political career. There is at least some portion of people on the left who did not view him as or left.
I mean,
maybe
Glenn Greenwald loves him.
View him
although,
as
I don't know
vile.
If I call. Yeah.
But after these 4 years, you either love Tucker Carlson or you really, really hate him. I don't know that there's swinging of people in the middle. You know what I mean? Maybe.
Yeah.
Depends on how he plays the next. It depends on how he approached it.
Because he has, like, he is quote unquote effective and aware of the necessity to co-opt left wing sort of populist rhetoric and concepts and package them in a xenophobic right wing context and try to sell that to people. And I have seen people sort of react to that positively in certain occasions. Like, wow, I can't believe I agree with Tucker Carlson and that kind of stuff. And I think it's just important to keep reminding people that he is a liar. He's full of shit. He's doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
But I also don't know if he's necessarily even interested in that. Although a report from like earlier today is that he met with George W. Bush in Gasparilla Island, Florida. So.
Oh, yeah. God. I do think that. I do worry about it. I worry about the next one. And what kind of if the Republican Party wants to win the next presidential election, who are they going to rally behind?
Mm-hmm. I mean, every single poll you see, they need
all these people that support Trump.
Yes.
They need him.
Yes.
So
they can't allow a split to main if they're going to have power again.
So
right?
what do you do? You have to embrace them. Or not, you know?
Right, and like you look at polls of like who do you want to run for president, Republicans, and it's just like Trump, Trump Jr., it's Ivanka,
Cruz
and Holly are really, really, really down low on that list.
We've got to take a quick break, but this is an interesting place to pick up because I want to talk about Mitch McConnell.
And I want to talk about what kind of cum Josh Hawley has.
Yeah, that's a really important thing to really get in there.
Yeah, and as a spoiler, I'm just going to one word spoiler.
His really atrocious side part hairstyle when you.
Yeah, I mean that all factors into my one word spoiler, which is spiders.
Oh God!
All right, here's some ads.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not.
And we're back has promised from those ads.
Oh, cool. I love keeping promises. Promises kept.
Promises.
We did keep the promise of 2020 being the worst year ever so far.
So far.
I think we're going to make 2021 worse. I've got my fingers crossed, guys. We're off to a great start. Oh, no.
Yeah.
I only promise the truth.
Robert has more stuff to dig into, but real quick, I just wanted to pick up where we left off on that conversation because it's interesting. As of today, Mitch McConnell is saying that Donald Trump did, and members of Congress did urge people to riot, basically. I don't know the exact quote. He has come that out, and he has signaled that he would vote guilty in proceedings. And this is an attempt to distance themselves from Donald Trump. And I just think that that's a really interesting, given the reality of the situation for them and their party, you know?
Mitch McConnell has clearly always hated Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah.
And didn't want to deal with the bullshit that he's had to deal with because Mitch McConnell is a very... very simple and by the books kind of authoritarian who wants to do his destroying of people's lives quietly in a room with pens and paper. And Donald Trump likes to shout it. And Mitch McConnell thinks that's gauche. And so I think he is taking a bit of a gamble, which is more than because he's not a huge gambler, Mitch. Because he is gambling that it's the right thing to do for the future of his ability to wield power and the Republican Party's ability to wield power to push against Trump and the what I guess we could call the QAnon right, you know, within the Republican Party. It seems like this is him saying that, like, we have to actually push back against these people because they're damaging to our ability to hold power, which he might be right on. He might be wrong on. I don't know yet, but it is interesting that he made that calculation.
Yeah,
and like up to this point too, like it's he's been able to do it for 4 years. Like you collaborate and you allow, and then when it's time to go, you're like, "Oh, wait, too far."
He also made it very clear. Well, it's pretty even in the Senate. We have a very clear mandate that we need to compromise and be moderate. I just wanted to throw this out. Also, I just keep thinking about, again, today Donald Trump called it the China virus. Mitch McConnell, his wife is Taiwanese, which is not Chinese from, you know, but still the racist rhetoric surrounding this president. And him, and just all these 4 years, just swallowing it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. You like, again, you collaborate to get what you want.
Yeah, he swallowed it so that he could spit out tax cuts. You know?
And the judges and all that.
This isn't some hard-hitting point, but I just keep, I've just been thinking about that. Like, fuck you.
Yeah, and it's a lot of people. You know, Ted Cruz went to bat for years for the guy who accused his dad of murdering the president and called his wife ugly.
He continues. He's ruined his career, hopefully.
They're spineless wretches. Nobody has ever liked Ted Cruz, and I include his wife and children and father
too.
In that. Yeah.
The most the most... unlikable. Everyone hates him. Who was it that said
everyone
that
who
him,
agrees with him and works with him despises him?
Even the people that vote for him hate him.
I forget who it was, but it was a Republican congressperson who said, like, I like Ted Cruz more than all of my colleagues, and I fucking hate Ted Cruz. And another, his former roommate who has been in college, who has been like a ceaseless critic of Cruz. My other favorite Cruz quote was like, the fact that he believes abhorrent things is bad, sure, but if Ted Cruz believed every single thing that I believed, I would only hate him 1% less. That's how odious he is, just as in his personality.
Lindsey Graham said.
Yeah, it was Lindsey Graham.
If you killed Ted Cruz on the floor of the Senate and the trial was in the Senate, nobody would convict you.
It's amazing how much everyone hates him.
Everyone hates him.
He's like, I'm fine with it.
If his wife was the president and he was murdered on the Senate, I think she would vote to pardon the killers.
Yes,
like,
absolutely.
She would.
They knew what they had to do, you know.
And look, that would be a bipartisan pardon. I wouldn't complain.
Like, this is something we can all come together on. Let's start at
square
one.
Unity and healing. Unity and healing.
Unity and healing by slamming Ted Cruz. Oh, Jesus, what a trash person.
Beautiful man.
There's some other, in terms of other good stuff that Joe Abides is gonna throw in. He's promised to repeal, or he's promised to fight, because he can't do it. Like, obviously, it would be an act of Congress to repeal the 2017 tax cuts, which unfairly favor the wealthy. And it would be good if that could be reversed and we could take more money from the very wealthy and put it into projects that help the very not wealthy. Although, this being America, most of that money will be funded back into the police or the military. So, you know, Pyrrhic victory, but still, I broadly support it. In terms of the, he's also promised to push to alter the Violence Against Women Act to offer more protections for transgender women in particular, which is great. He wants to push to pass the Equality Act, which would add more protections for LGBT people. And in general, he's made a number of statements specifically about trans rights, including repealing the trans military ban enacted by Trump, which, you know, depending on how you feel about the military, is a mixed bag. But he's also agreed to restore Obama-era guidance for transgender students in schools, which will protect students' access to sports, bathrooms, and locker rooms, you know, to use those in accordance with their gender identity, which is very good. Again, something that will make life a bit less shitty for very marginalized people.
Yeah.
And
also,
something I'm very supportive
he
of.
Has chosen Rachel Levine, a trans woman, Dr. Rachel Levine, to serve as a assistant secretary for health at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which is a really that's great. It's the first known trans person.
Yeah,
and it's nice to you know, be able to pair that with actual policy.
Yeah,
it's not like the lip service representation one might see sometimes. It's like, no, we're doing this, and we're also like actually actively doing things that will help everyday people.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's good.
It's really good. that. Things are, yeah, those are things that are positive, you know. I don't have any notes on that, assuming he actually goes through. Just like, it's good that we have our first indigenous secretary of the interior who will hopefully understand some of the issues faced by those people and some of the traditional biases that our system has against their sovereignty. And that things will maybe move in a positive direction there as well. Fingers crossed, we'll see. I do want to talk about guns a little bit, because Biden has one of the things I am happy about. I was worried, and we've talked about this a bit, that we were going to see the Dems, because Biden had talked about this a few times, making a major initial push for gun control and throwing in some hard, like an attempt to make an assault weapons ban, in his first, you know, 100 days, which I think would be a bad move, regardless of your opinion on assault weapons. Banning them is not nearly cannot possibly, if you're a reasonable person, be argued to be in the same level of urgency as action on climate change, or as action on COVID-19 relief, or as I think action on immigration, to be honest. And it seems, broadly speaking, like he is not going to be focusing on throwing anything huge through Congress on guns before he makes that stuff happen, which is good, because you have a limited amount of political capital in your 100 days and a limited number of things that you can do. In terms of what he has talked about doing in his first 100 days, one of them is reducing what a lot of people on the liberals will call loopholes in the gun background check system. There are some loopholes. There was a shooter in Aurora a year or two ago who wasn't allowed to own a gun, and the cops just like sent him a letter asking him to turn it in, and then he went on a shooting spree and killed like five people.
Sent them a letter?
Yeah, they sent him a letter being like, hey, you bought a gun and you're a felon, or I think you have a history of domestic abuse. You're not allowed to have the gun that we know you bought, that we let you buy because we didn't notice it in time. please give it back.
Who even who opens their mail, let alone mail
from
cops?
I know, right? It's amazing. So like that sort of stuff, absolutely. Like there there have been a number of other cases of shooters, of people who have had access to firearms who by the letter of the law shouldn't have, because the system of background is really fucked up, and I'm very supportive of fixing that. I will state that sometimes when people talk about loopholes, they talk about like the gun show loophole, which is not a thing. Certain states allow what are called personal sales to happen. So if you're not a gun dealer, if you sell less than, I think it's like $5,000 worth of guns a year, you can make personal transfers without a background check. And the laws are, at least initially, were supposed to be in place so that people could like give guns to their kids or family members or whatever, or as gifts without having to deal with a complex legal process. They have been massively, in a lot of cases, used by people in order to facilitate criminal transfer of firearms or transfer of firearms to cartels. So like, again, I think that is something that should be looked at but it's not a loophole. It's explicitly the law in a number of states like Texas allows you to transfer guns that way. And I don't know, like it's the kind of thing where if there were to be a national law to ban that, no one really knows how the Supreme Court would land on it. I push against calling it a loophole, but I'm not against changing those laws so that everyone has to pass a background check to buy a gun, for sure. One thing I am less certain about, and I, in fact, pretty critical of, is Biden wanting to repeal liability protection for gun manufacturers, which would allow Americans to sue the firearms industry if a gun is used in a crime, which seems odd to me because you can't sue the people making alcohol or cars if, you know, there's a drunk driving incident. I think there's some room to talk about when companies have specifically been pushing ads that, because there have been gun companies that have pushed ads that are on the edge of urging violence or on the edge.
I was gonna say,
And I do think there's that absolutely is a conversation that should be had, and there's some room to talk about what kind of advertising you're allowed to do, or just banning
regulations on that.
Same with like
advertising,
like Joe Camel.
That's a really slippery slope otherwise.
And there are, and when we talk about tobacco versus the gun industry, there are some similarities that should be discussed. One of them being that the gun industry has consistently lobbied to make it harder and in some cases impossible to study the problems of gun violence and study how certain laws might affect and reduce gun violence. And that there is very fair reason to be critical and to say that something not wildly dissimilar to what was done to the tobacco industry, there should be some changes made to how the gun industry is allowed to operate. Because they have done a lot of really shady shit. The thing that most comes to mind, and I'm saying a lot of shady shit, not just in terms of like inciting violence, but shady shit that has specifically harmed gun users. I can think about the company Taurus. One of the reasons I always advise people against buying a Taurus firearm is that for years, Taurus put something like 1 million guns onto the U.S. market that had safeties that didn't work. And in a lot of cases, people's guns would fire without them while the safeties were engaged. And people died because their weapons fired when they should not have. And they never had to issue a recall because of laws that the gun industry has lobbied for. And so I'm not saying there needs to be significant change. I don't think allowing people to sue a gun company because, you know, they get a loved one gets shot with a Smith and Wesson is necessarily the right call. But this absolutely seems, changes need to be made.
This seems like a good time to just mention that the NRA did file for bankruptcy.
I did.
A few days ago.
Yeah.
It does seem like a... Yeah.
There you go. No.
I mean...
It seems like a general... Like, you know, sometimes it's just like, yeah, we'll file for bankruptcy. Like, that's a good business decision for us, and then they'll be fine.
Yeah.
But we will see.
I'm just putting it out there. Like, when we're talking about the, you know, gun industry and you know, law...
How things have been going.
I can't think of many organizations that have done more harm to the cause of gun rights than the NRA, to be honest. The worst idea they ever had was turning ownership of firearms, which is as protected as your right to free speech, into a culture war issue between left and right.
Have you done a Bastards on the NRA?
Not yet. There's a very good, there's a whole season of the wonderful podcast Gangster Capitalism that does a, gives a very, very fair and talks to a lot of reformers within the NRA and people who have left because of their frustrations and rage at the rampant and unbelievable corruption within that organization.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to just like the way in which they have incited the culture war. And I recommend listening to that season of Gangster Capitalism if you want to really understand just how hard, how comprehensively bad of an organization the NRA has become. And they didn't always used to be. They used to just be like, we think Americans should know how to shoot accurately and safely, and that's all we're about.
Changed in the 60s with the civil rights movement, right?
Not just that. You know, we talk about in our two-parter on the Border Patrol. And we talked about how the first head of the Border Patrol that militarized the Border Patrol was a dude who murdered a Mexican immigrant when he was like a teenager and did several years in prison and then joined and became the head of the Border Patrol and militarized it. He was also the first head of the NRA that started pushing it towards being an engine of the culture war.
Yeah.
Because he was a fascist.
Yeah. I remember that episode.
For more, check out the song Raymond Cassiano by the Drive-By Truckers. Gives a pretty good overview of some things. But yeah, I don't know. I think that I'm interested in what Biden's actually going to do on guns, because it just based on the way Congress is now, at least for the next 2 years, unless they get a supermajority in 2022, I think it's unlikely that they're going to get the kind of assault weapons ban that he talked about on the campaign trail. He has a lot of power to use things like to change the way the ATF goes after gun violations. And like there are certain things like pistol, like the gun that I have right here, which is legally a pistol.
What? And get out of here.
Huge.
Yeah, that's a handgun legally, because this thing on the back is not a stock, it's a brace. And the ATF could just choose to make this illegal without being registered as a short-barreled rifle. And I'm not necessarily, I don't think there's, I actually see no reason for short-barreled rifles to be regulated more than long ones. They're not any more dangerous from a perspective of violent crime. It's really just a holdover from the gangster era. But that is the kind of thing that Biden could change and order the ATF to start altering the way that they crack down on without needing any sort of congressional approval. So I see, when I think about gun action under Biden, I think more of it, at least initially, is going to take the form of the stuff he doesn't need to get through Congress, or stuff like fixing background check problems that you could get, I think, passed through Congress.
Everyone wants that.
Like most gun owners want that. Yeah.
It's probably a good strategic way to approach this, if that's how it turns out that he does.
And I think, there's also I feel like even like I feel like Beto kind of scared Dems in general about guns. Like his utter failure.
You shouldn't go hard against guns in Texas, because every liberal and leftist in Texas I know is strapped as hell.
Exactly. Fewer mass shootings during a pandemic. So I don't know.
Yeah, you're right.
And a lot more millions of new gun owners, which there was just a Gallup poll out that showed that support for significant gun control measures like an assault weapons ban is actually the lowest it's been since 2016, and even 5% lower among Democrats. A lot of people in this last year suddenly thought for the first time about, oh, maybe I need a gun.
And
that has included people in places like California who are like, oh, actually, it's harder than I thought to buy one legally.
A lot of people are getting mad that it takes so long. It's like, well, you're good. It's good, right?
Yeah, that's what you wanted, right?
I thought we were on the same page about this.
No, I mean, I it's like maybe we should think about the fact that it is frustrating that all of these heavily armed fascists and quasi-fascists and neo-fascists have arsenals, and it's very difficult for everyone else to catch up now that they realize the danger is here. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that is something that should be thought about when we think about gun control. Yeah. Anyway, that's all I want to say about guns. We should move on.
Today.
For now.
Today.
Well, it's about time for us to wrap the show up.
Yeah.
Today, when this drops, will be the inauguration. We are hoping it goes smoothly. I just read earlier today, we read that two National Guard soldiers assigned to Washington, D.C. for the inauguration had been removed over, you know, inappropriate posts and texts about the event. And I guess now I'm just seeing a line that the AP's reported that 12 troops now have been removed or flagged by way of a tip line.
I'm sure that's all of them. You got all of them.
All of the 25,000. Yeah.
So, they're the only ones here. Yeah.
Yeah. If hopefully
good luck tomorrow or today when you're listening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully all of it has gone well.
Yeah.
If not, we'll probably be recording an emergency episode.
Perhaps.
But I'm not even, you know what? I rescind what I just said. I'm not even putting that out there.
Yeah, it was a positive episode today.
Today was a positive episode,
and I'm positive that we will never have a problem with white nationalism in the military or in the ranks of our police again. The only 28 cops and, I don't know, several dozen service people with those leanings were all at the Capitol, and they're all going to go to jail, and there's no one else left in the country in those positions who holds those beliefs. I'm confident.
Solved.
Get
them.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished. Give me a banner and an aircraft carrier. Put me on the Gerald Ford, the aircraft carrier that doesn't work. Let's do it. Yeah.
So should we end on the funny note, guys?
Oh, yeah. We're going to quickly, you know, this is unrelated to Joseph Robinette Biden Jr.
JRB.
Or Donald Johnald Trump.
Johnald.
Tesla is looking for a new position. I'm going to read the whole thing real quick.
Job from hell.
Tesla Energy Support Specialists handle a variety of customer issues while delivering on world-class customer service. The role of a specialist is to resolve or escalate complaints through appropriate channels and address social media escalations directed at the CEO with critical thinking.
He's hiring someone to deal with his trolls on Twitter.
Protect me from people posting.
Just do what I did. I just altered my notifications so that I only get notifications when people I follow respond to me, and my life is 15% better.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
it's
the
much
only
easier.
Yeah, it's the best way to use that site.
Yeah.
Which nobody should be on.
Which
Except
no one
that then
be
I
on.
Know I know when my friends don't like my tweet though. The other side of it. Mm-hmm. It really stands out.
But Elon can't do that. I do. There was a great tweet recently. There was someone posting about, like, in the mid-2000s on Tumblr, whenever, like, a meme had reached a certain level of penetration, Denny's would repurpose it, and then we would know that the meme was dead. And we all hated Denny's, but they played a critical role in our meme ecosystem. And now on Twitter, the same role is performed by the wealthiest man in human history.
Elon Musk, the new Denny's.
The new Denny's.
Oh, man.
There's one last beautiful thing that I just found on the website none of us should use. Well, it's actually just cuts from a CNN politics article, but several Republican lawmakers who are alleged to have been involved in the rally that preceded the deadly riot on the U.S. Capitol have sought clemency from Trump before he leaves office. But after meeting with his legal advisors for several hours on Saturday, the president decided he would not grant them, according to two people familiar with the plans.
We're waiting for the pardons list today. Anxiously.
There will be. Fingers crossed Joe Exotic is on there.
The odds were good for Joe Exotic when I was looking at the prop bets earlier.
It seems good. I would like him to get one more shot at Carol Baskins.
I would like a list of those Republican lawmakers who asked.
Yeah.
So would I.
It seems like he's not going to be pardoning himself because he wasn't told that after the riot, it would make him look guilty. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's the
Donald
funniest
Trump hates
part of
looking
it.
Guilty.
Really is shot that, himself in the foot there, didn't he?
He's clearly only doing it because it might lead to him getting charged for inciting an insurrection, which is the funniest. Like, just he's so on brand with all this shit, with just like he ends office not just with hundreds of thousands dead and with the national economy and civil society in tatters, but also the people who believed in him the most and were most willing to go to bat with him are now all staring at decades in federal prison, and he's just abandoning them. It's so funny.
Perfect till the very end. He's living art. It's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I think that's it for us today.
Follow
you can check
us out.
Your
pod.
Yes. She just Yes, that's thank you, Sophie. I couldn't agree with you more. Follow us on Worst Year Pod.
Worst Year Pod.
That's what this is, and that's who we are.
It's hard to say. Worst Year Pod.
Worst Year Pod.
It's very grinchy.
Worcestershire pie.
Worcestershire pod.
Let's do a whole pod dedicated to Worcestershire sauce, mainly dedicated to figuring out how we're supposed to say it and what the fuck you're supposed to put it on.
Worcestershire sauce.
Sophie, let's get a pitch out to corporate. This is all we're doing now. This is our last politics episode. Everything from
this
here on out
now.
Is Worcestershire. Worcestershire sauce?
Worcestershire pod.
Worcestershire.
All right.
We're the Worcestershire podcast now.
Bye.
Bye.
Everything's so dumb, and it's going to get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.